Hey guys, are you at the point right now in your band's development where you need to get into like a better PA situation, or you need to get out of the garage because it's just too hot, or because the neighbors are complaining, or you just need some more room, or you actually do need to do it on a better PA? Well, let me tell you about Space Rehearsal and Recording. A uniquely Austin experience, preserving its musical heritage and inspiring future artists, Space is an affordable venue for rehearsal and recording situated just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. With 31 spacious rooms, wide gallery-lit corridors, and excellent parking, they have the space to help you with your creative endeavors. Join their customers that range from local and international musicians, acting troupes, yoga practitioners, performance artists, and yes, I am in the band Skyrocket, and we have a lockout room there. We are there at least once a week rehearsing and working out our stuff. We are working on vocals. We are working on new songs. We are, working stuff out. We are going in with our own individual projects and practicing there. It's a great place to practice. It's a great creative environment. There are other creatives there. There are some rooms that have windows. There is a great community there. It's fantastic. So get on down to Space Rehearsal and Recording. Tell them that you heard about it on How Did I Get Here, and you will get one free hour. Call them at 512-448-9518 or look them up on spaceatx.com. That's Space Rehearsal and Recording. Tell them you heard it on How Did I Get Here and get one free hour. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, welcome to the show. I'm Johnny, I'm your host. I have a great show for you today. I have singer-songwriter who hails from Clarks Mills, Pennsylvania, Rick Horniak. He has an album out that he made down here in Austin called Marigold with producer Rich Brotherton, and it features people like Cindy Cashdollar, Lloyd Maines, members of Robert O'Keefe's band, Asleep at the Wheel members, including my good friend, David Sanger, good friend of the show. He plays on the record. And, yeah, he came by. I met him at a Steve Pold show a couple months ago. We talked about it. He said, hey, I listened to the show. I said, hey, come on down. Let's talk. And so he did. We got to know each other. He's a great guy. And he's playing this weekend, 4th of July, in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, if you're there. He'll be there July 4th and 5th. All right? So we have a great conversation. Stick around for that. Before we get to that conversation, I'm going to tell you what's going on with me. Today is a big day for me. It's not just the 1st of July. It's the first day of my Tuesday residency at Strange Brew in Austin, Texas. I will be doing every Tuesday at 8 p.m., and I will have friends. It's Johnny Gowdy and Friends. Tonight, I will be joined by Joseph King, my dear friend from New York for many, many years, and compadre, my friend Jeremy Nail from Liars and Saints, again, another dear friend and compadre. I write songs with both those guys, play with them all the time. And so tonight's going to be really great. I'm very excited about it. I will be doing this every Tuesday, July and August. So come on out. I'm going to have lots of great people. Everyone from Kurt Newman from the Bodines, AJ Vallejo, Kendall Beard, my dear friend Corey Glazer, who does our theme song from Sheboygan and Skyrocket, Casey Crowley, Elizabeth McQueen, all kinds of people, man. It's going to be great. All kinds of special guests playing a set. Then I'll play we'll play some songs together, and then everyone will do their own set. Great nights. Strange Brew, Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Come on down. All right. What's going on with me? I played in Houston this weekend with Skyrocket. We did the closing of a place called Rockefeller Hall. I've been going there for years. I've seen so many shows there, I can't even tell you. I saw the Neville Brothers there like five times. That's where I met Kurt Newman from the Bodines when I saw them in 1989 there, 2 days after my 21st birthday. Very exciting time. Who else did I see there? Met Dr. John there. Saw him play as well. I mean, it's just a great, legendary place, and now it's closing. We got to play the closing night of it. Pretty unbelievable. I wonder what it's going to be now. I hope it's a cool place. I hope they keep it cool. It's been there for years and years and years. It was a staple place in the 70s and 80s and some of the 90s, no, 2000s. What else happened? Sunday, came home, and my dear friend Amanda came from L.A., and it was her birthday, and Zuri and I went to dinner with her and friends like Todd Wolfson, my friend Jen White, and this dude Arthur. We went to this great place, and you know what? Amanda bought everybody dinner. We went to this fancy French place, and she bought everybody dinner under the radar. So that's a weird thing to do. Makes you feel bad as a friend. I felt good because at least I brought her a present. And it was a thoughtful present, a present I thought about, and I wanted to make sure that she got it. She enjoyed it. She's a sweetheart. And I went to go see Todd Wolfson last night, do his extravaganza with this girl named Liv, who's great. I can't remember her last name off the top of my head. But also, Jeff Johnston played Saw, which is great, and he played some different stuff. I couldn't really see him. And then Allison Lipkin, of course, who did the artwork for our podcast, she was playing as well. She's fantastic. She played saxophone and guitar, sang through a telephone. It was all crazy, man. It was a great time. Have a great time going to go see those Monkey Nest shows with Todd Wolfson. He does them once a month. If you know, look it up. Look up Monkey Nest if you're in Austin, okay? And Tuesdays, of course, belong to Johnny Gowdy and Friends at Strange Brew, 8 p.m. Tonight, Joseph King and Jeremy Nail, my good friends. Come on out if you are in Austin, all right? What are your plans for 4th of July? That's my big question. I am not playing with Skyrocket at House of Blues in Houston on 4th of July. I will be at a wedding here. My friend Joe G is getting married, but I'm playing on the 3rd at Steiner Ranch with Skyrocket, and then I'm playing on the 5th at 1-to-1 Bar. All this stuff is happening in Austin this week, or if you're in Houston, go see Skyrocket. Go see them for 4th of July at House of Blues. That should be a great show. It's called Cocktails and Covers thing that they do. That's great. Great time. All right. Is there anything else that I'm missing? What else am I missing? Nothing, I don't think. I guess we should talk to my friend, Rick Horniak, all the way from Clarks Mills, Pennsylvania. He moved to Austin. He's here. He is playing this weekend. If you are in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, he will be there on the 4th and 5th of July. All right? Let's talk to Rick. Let's get down.
Took my hand. Truth be told, it happened awful quick. It's the way you understand me. I've been searching, asking why.
That's it's about an hour north of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I like to tell people that there's not much to see there but old abandoned factories, cornfields, and the Amish.
Yeah, is it like a what's his name, Billy Joel song?
Allentown.
Yeah,
That's over on the Philly side.
But it's still kind of this
same vibe.
Story.
Yeah, like working class, post World War II area that's sort of drying up.
Did you grow up there?
I did. Yeah, I moved here when I was 27.
What were they?
My dad, when I was a kid, was a truck driver, and he ended up kind of moving over to construction, like building bridges, like halfway through, because I kind of learned this later on in life, but he had a friend that got killed in a semi truck. And then my mom said that he ended up becoming really fearful. He'd like find reasons to not have to go out and drive to Chicago and stuff like that. Like, oh, it's rainy, and I think my back hurt last time I got off the. So I think he just got fearful of driving in the trucks, and so switched what he did. And my mom's always kind of been in the office administrative world, like secretary and payroll and stuff like that.
So what was the future there? In your bio, it's like you had to get out of there.
Yeah.
Were you playing and stuff? Because I imagine trying to do something in Clarks Mills. Sorry. Look at the name of Pennsylvania. It'd be tough. You don't see the career side of that probably.
Definitely cover bands are predominant as far as like successful, like,
yeah.
I mean, this is kind of funny, but the most successful cover bands were one band that dressed up like Amish guys called the Earthquakers.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, what did they play?
They do like classic rock, like AC/DC and all that kind of stuff, but they have like the full like beards and the outfits and everything, and people go crazy for it. And it's like, and this band's making the Earthquakers. And this band's making $2,000 a night, you know?
They should. That's a brilliant idea.
I mean, yeah. And there was another one called Disco Explosion where they all dressed up in like big big Afro wigs, and the lead singer dressed up like Austin Powers.
Yeah, that's a good name. Disco Explosion.
Disco Explosion. And they're now something else. But
so what were the venues there?
They're really just a lot of bar and grill kind of
like sports bar kind of places that have like maybe a stage in the corner, just maybe a corner they move the tables out of or something.
Yeah, and there's one place called Quaker Steak and Lube, and they've now franchised, and I think there's one in Waco and stuff. And they used to have a place called Hot Rod Cafe that was kind of the, you know, if you got a gig in there,
did
that
you
was
say
like
Quaker Steak and Lube.
Yeah, like the
Quakers.
Like, yeah, I think that's how it's pronounced, like the old oil.
Oh, like Quaker Steak,
right?
Oh,
but
I thought
they call it Steak and Lube, okay. And it's so it's like a wing shack plus, you know,
yeah,
bar kind of thing. But that was like the bigger area that would hold, you know, 600 or 800 people or whatever. But
that's wicked.
Yeah.
So, were you playing out there, or were you?
I just started to get going. I mean, I've always played, but I was, you know, this kind of like reminds me of the Steve Poltz one that you did recently, where mm-hmm. he talked about the stage fright. Like, it took me a long time to get out of the bedroom and garage space and start playing in public. I think I was like maybe 25 before.
You
I
don't
started.
Act as weird as he does though when you're out there, do you?
I'm working on it.
Okay.
Because he does something very special that I was totally influenced by, and I was like, wow, that what a single person can do on stage, like how he opens himself up to the room.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah,
very
I don't
impressive.
Know how he does that. It's weird.
And to me, he bears himself, which is so much cooler than someone trying to act cool or.
Yeah, because there's, you know, he is cool, but he's not, it's not like a Fonzie kind of thing by any means. It's
right.
Like the anti-Fonz.
It's the, I'm going to just take a bunch, it's like he took a bunch of truth serum right before he got up on stage or whatever. And
yeah.
I wonder if he the next day wonders, oh, should I have said that? You know? But maybe not. He's been doing it long enough.
I think there's a flood of stuff just flying out that he doesn't really have time to wonder what had come out because there's so much coming out.
The filter's off.
Yeah, it's just flying out. Yeah. So you wanted to get out of there though, pretty bad, because that like basically the first two paragraphs of your thing is like the skid marks that you left in Pennsylvania to get the hell out of there. Did you? Why did you have the biggest yard sale of all the time?
Well,
you sold your house too, right?
I did. Huh. And
what were you doing? What was your job that you wanted to quit?
I worked in a factory called Reznor that I think I mentioned
to you
that
right.
Trent Reznor's grandfather started like way back. And
what was the factory doing?
Basically,
goth kids?
goth kids and industrial giants of America. Cloning them.
What did they do?
They made like these big rooftop heaters that you see like on top of malls and Walmarts and things like that. So I worked there for 7 years right out of high school. So besides some time that I did at the Art Institute in Pittsburgh. So I kind of did everything from like building them to welding them to wiring and testing and all that stuff. Cause you kind of like bid, it's like the government a little bit where you like bid jobs and get like higher labor grades.
Okay.
And things like that. And then it was a steelworkers union job. So depending on where I was at seniority wise and how much I wanted to hold day turn or afternoon or whatever would kind of dictate what I bid on.
Were you like in a line assembly?
Yeah,
line?
I was in assembly line.
Did you wear
line.
Like an overcoat and goggles?
No, but they did when we called OSHA on them one time because some people started getting Legionnaires' disease. You know what that is?
I do know that that Ronald Reagan was very obsessed with that. Sorry, this thing's making all kinds of noise.
I heard that. I just want to make sure it's still working.
Yeah, it's still working. I'm watching.
Gremlins on the line.
Something's going on with this machine.
Well, some people came down with that, and so we called OSHA because they weren't doing anything about it. And then after that, they basically were like, everyone has to wear safety glasses and side shields and, you know.
Was there giant pieces of what were you dealing with?
Big pieces of steel, but really like, the job that I ended up kind of settling into that I didn't mind so much because it took like an hour and a half to wire one of these things and get all the electronics kind of going and then hook up the gas and test them.
Mm-hmm.
Where some people worked in the press room because they made a lot of their own parts. And like when I first started there, God, I definitely would have been suicidal if I had to stay in that job. But where like they just put a piece of metal in the machine and ching.
Like you just do that all day?
All day long. And some guys didn't even mind that. And it was 7 days a week. Like they liked all that overtime. And so I needed to just, I kind of settled in that one job because at least it had some diversity depending on like, just like when you buy a car, it's like whatever options they wanted. So each one was a little different. You
right.
had to like read the
but
wiring.
But still you were cut out to kind of like have a dream.
Yeah.
That's not a place with the dream in the career.
And music was always number one in my heart. I never had any influence in my life to push me in that direction.
Right. Until... And in a place like that, like where you lived, you weren't going to run into guys that were like pro guys.
Right. Because even Trent Reznor had to leave to.
So he's from there?
He's from Mercer, yeah. Which is like 20 minutes away.
He went to Cleveland though, right?
I think it's where he got started and then New Orleans after that.
Do you know
that.
Mark Addison from here? He's a producer guy. They had a band together.
Mm-mm.
They had a band. It was in, they were even in that movie with Joan Jett and Michael J. Fox.
Okay.
It was about their band, actually.
Well, I know that like some of his family and everything still live there, but you know, I think they go way back.
So do you go back there?
I do. I'm getting ready to go.
You're going to do some in August there, right?
I'm doing the last 2 weeks of July.
What happens when you go there and play? Are your friends proud of you? They're like, oh yeah, finally, dude, you got out of there.
Yeah, it's kind of a reunion of... friends and fans and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't go back for a while, but then once I started and I realized like I wish I could have the draw in Austin like I have back home, you know.
Sure.
It's like it's even for my CD release party, I don't think I had 50 people there here, you know, but that's just how it is. So I think I go back because it's worth nurturing, and it's also a sort of a working vacation where I can kind of go home and be around everybody I grew up, see my family and everything, and still play music.
So
and
were you
money.
Were you married there?
No, I met my wife here.
Okay, so you had your own house, and you decided, hey, I'm going to get out of here, and you sold everything, including your house, and you just got in. Did you know you were coming here, or did you really make up your mind while you were driving?
Well, what
that's crazy.
Well, what happened was, because I mentioned not having any influence in my life, and this, I guess my stepmom's brother-in-law and his wife, they came to stay with my dad and her because they were going to try to talk my stepbrother out of going into the army, and basically it didn't
work.
What
year was that?
That was 90.
Oh, there's nothing going on.
They still, but you know, in the United
but they're States, like, don't do it, man.
Yeah,
come on.
They could be.
What are you going to do?
First one on the line or whatever if something does happen.
Were your parents hippies then?
No.
Because you think people that work in like a town like that, they're like, yeah, fucking America, USA, go do it. You know what I mean? That seems like the vibe. That's what I think when I think of those towns.
Well, my dad was very unsupportive my whole life. And I think that's why right out of high school.
He was unsupportive in music?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean.
What about the factory job? Keep that.
Yeah, he was he was mad at me when I quit. Really mad.
Oh, yeah.
And really mad when he saw the
security there.
The for sale sign in the yard for my house. He was like, you're throwing away everything you worked for. And, you know, to some degree, that's true. But and on the other hand, I never would have made it here. I never would have met my wife. I wouldn't have grown as a musician the way I have since I've been here.
Yeah, where's he at now with it all?
Well, now he's proud of me, but I think it's just, I don't know. It's
he,
a very
he gave up.
being mad I think he knows, like, I'm pushing 40. I'm probably not going to change now or
whatever.
Yeah,
that's what I think my dad did eventually. He just, like, stopped.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard you grew up in Miami?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. I've been to Miami.
You like it?
I did. I was...
what were you doing there?
We went to visit my stepmom's, like my stepbrother's dad and his family, because they moved down there for a while, and he was born there, and he was into the whole, like, coke dealing and everything in the 80s, and she basically said, like, I had to leave with Keith because I had Colombians and Cubans and machine guns in my house all the time.
Yeah. Oh, that. Yeah, that was
the fast life, and... It's funny, now he, like, works sort of with the DEA, that guy, and I think it's because...
He has some knowledge.
He has some knowledge about what it takes to smuggle and all that kind of, and hide and all that kind of stuff, but have you ever seen Cocaine Cowboys?
Yeah.
The documentary? It's a great documentary.
Yeah,
about...
there's a lot of time and a lot of places. It's very weird that my family, there wasn't, like, a lot... Well, my aunt married a guy that was a big smuggler, and it was unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you were there...
You were part of it.
Yeah. My dad wasn't like a smuggler or a dealer or anything like that, but I'm pretty sure he benefited from huge cash investments when he was building properties and stuff like that.
Well, that's what they said in that documentary. It was kind of like a sleepy little beach town until...
And then all of a sudden...
The 80s, and banking's there and every other industry.
So your dad... And what about your mom, Shira? She proud of you?
She's always been very supportive, and I think that's where I get... more of my artistic side. You know, she plays piano and fiddle a little bit when I was a kid. And
now, did they play country music then? Because you have a real foundation. I mean, you seem like a guy that comes from Like, if you said, like, oh, I'm from, you know, northern Mississippi or something, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's probably true.
Right.
It's a lot different than being from Pennsylvania, although I guess you get a lot of country music there.
It's, no, just the bad country, really, is all I ever really heard. So
the
what
pop country?
Yeah, and what I grew up listening to, which would be my parents' record collection, and I still love this music to this day, is, like, the golden oldies, you know, like Motown stuff and Tommy James and the Shondells and Dion and the Belmonts and Frankie Valli and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That was the earliest stuff that I ever listened to before I owned my own music. So that I'd say there's I mean, that had to have influenced me somewhat. And the country thing was just something that happened when I moved here because I never really heard anything but the pop country. And I definitely didn't like anything that was going on in the 90s. Right. And then I got here and, you know, Johnny Cash and Merle Haggard and all that, you know, Waylon Jennings, all that kind of outlaw stuff. Willie Nelson, like, that stuff wasn't really popular or being talked about in my circle of
music guys. But then what did you get into musically? Like, what were you doing musically up there before you moved here, before you discovered country music? What kind of jams were you creating?
I think I didn't know the term singer-songwriter until I moved here, but I was always heavily influenced by Bob Dylan. And so I definitely had kind of a folk rock kind of sound going on.
So you were still on this kind of path. It's not like you were like a you know, Nine Inch Nails kind of guy, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I want to be country.
Although I do love that first album he did, Pretty Hate Machine.
Yeah, great album.
My friends and I used to eat LSD and listen to that in headphones. Good stuff.
Yeah. Did you, so what inspired you to start doing it? Like to start, you know what I mean?
You mean
like,
music in general? Or yeah, just
when did you start going like, oh, you know what, I'm going to do this?
I think
someone get me a guitar. I got to do this.
Yeah, I was playing the tennis racket and the broom.
Okay,
you know, when I was like 12 or 13.
Right, to what? Dion and the Belmonts or
no,
something
by
of your
then
own
it was at that era of my life. It would have been like Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil, kind of stuff.
Okay, and so you went through like a metal phase and
yeah, I mean some of that earliest stuff I ever learned on the guitar was like Master of Puppets and
oh yeah,
Metallica.
So you learned like some. I mean that's pretty complex and fast and.
But it
actually doesn't apply to anything you do.
And that never comes out. And sometimes I hear music or I saw Green Day live and I was like, man, why can't I write like that? But that's just not what comes out of me.
Sure.
I don't know if you have that problem too, where it's like you want to try to do a certain genre, but it's, you know, it still has your DNA on it no matter what you.
Yeah. I know what you mean. When I get into a thing where I'm writing a lot of songs and I start just kind of like, okay, let me write a song that's like, I'm not going to say ragtime because I've never done that. But, you know, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this kind of thing.
And it's just hard to make anything else come out except for you.
Yeah.
You
know, there was,
if you want it to be genuine.
There was a time I produced this band that was from here called Dragonfly Jones.
And
they were like a southern rock band.
Mm-hmm.
And like, t-shirts and like no shirts I mean and bell bottoms and like, you know, homemade essences, fragrances.
I used to work with Kevin, the drummer in that band.
So mm-hmm. I go to do this thing with them, and when we first went in to do pre-production, they were like, oh, we want to be like Radiohead. And I was like,
but you don't,
that's
sound
gonna
like
sound
Radiohead.
Totally stupid and disingenuous, because mm-hmm. I know it's not super cool to go around sounding like Lynyrd Skynyrd, but if you own that shit, it will be cool, because mm-hmm. like certainly at the time of Rick Astley and Guns N' Roses, and You Want It All But You Can't Have It. What was mm-hmm. that band? Faith No More.
Yeah.
And this kind of music, like to have a band like the Black Crowes come out and just totally be huge, it's because they own their shit. No one was looking for the new Skynyrd.
At the time, I thought they were like a classic band that was making a comeback. I didn't realize that was their first record, because you're right, they had that sound, and it's like, oh, well, these guys have been around. They're from back in the 70s,
and it just
whatever.
Shows you that no, any sound is cool if you fucking own it,
right?
And if it's your trip, if Lynyrd Skynyrd tried to sound like Kraftwerk, that would suck.
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine that stuff is strange. Do you still listen? What do you listen to? Do you listen to modern?
Currently. I like Ray LaMontagne,
uh-huh.
kind of going through a Blaze Foley thing right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because I sort of discovered him through working with Casper.
Yeah.
And
it's an interesting story, that guy.
Yeah. Paolo Nutini, have you ever listened to him?
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah. I know a lot of people that really like him.
He's got the heart, you know. That's what kind of like drew me to him. I was like, man, that guy's really good, like bearing it all. Just like Steve Pultz does it in a performance way. This guy does it in the way he sings. You know, where you expect to just see him collapse onto his knees at a concert or something like that.
Right. So anyway, you were saying that you didn't have much influence, but somebody came and stayed with you, and we sidetracked, and this is how you found out about Austin.
So
your uncle.
He would be a step uncle.
Starting to do an intervention on your brother to not go to the army.
That's why they moved and stayed with my dad and Judy, my stepmom, and they were basically, that goal was to try to influence Keith to not join the army because...
You just sit around smoking weed all day like, hey man, look how cool it is if you don't join the army.
Right, like here's a Salvador Dali, because he's an artist too, and like he wanted to go to school to get an art degree. And this is just like my dad, and since he's never going to listen to this, I could say all this, but, you know, well, we're not going to pay for that college or whatever. And
right.
So they, like, are pushing him to go to the Army, and...
Without meaning to.
Well, no, they...
Oh, they were.
They wanted to pay for his schooling or whatever, and so I guess the ironic thing that happened was he, Paul, this guy that ended up kind of being my mentor, was like, you know, we went there to influence Keith, and then you were like this wilted flower that just needed some water because... You know, basically...
This creative guy stuck in, like, the wrong soil.
Right, and he was like, oh, you know, I think I had, like, a two-song demo that I had made, and he's like, well, go get it, let's hear what you got, or whatever, and my dad was kind of, like, chiming in about, you know, oh, then they grew up and had to get in the real world and get a job, or whatever, and so he takes me upstairs, and we listen to these couple songs, and he goes, you're fucking good, man. Don't listen to those people downstairs, and it was just like... You know, I had never had anyone just tell
heavy.
Me I was okay,
yeah.
You know? And so they moved away to Northern California because they weren't influencing Keith. And then him and I started kind of chatting on the phone. And he basically was like, you're never going to get where you want to be unless you get to a place where there's other musicians. And he's like, now he told me Austin because of the sound I had, kind of that Steve Earle kind of singer-songwriter raspy thing that I just naturally have. At the time, I was just kind of looking at any place that had some kind of scene. You know, I looked into New York City, New Orleans, L.A., and I put the house up for sale. I sold, you know, you mentioned the largest garage sale in history. I kind of like sold all these possessions that I accumulated in this giant farmhouse that I owned. And then I had a little bit of money in the bank, and it was like time to go. So all these people that over the years had said, well, if you ever want to come out here and, you know, stay a couple of days and check this area out, let us know.
You start calling everyone.
I started calling everybody, and everybody said no. It wasn't a good time, except for two people that I knew in Texas that I hardly didn't know at all. Like, one guy was like the brother of a coworker that I had like maybe met briefly, and he's like, sure, come on down.
Yeah, if you want to come to Austin, man, we got singers.
Right. Well, he lived in Houston, but it like got me close enough. I don't know why at the time I had like $20,000. I didn't just think of just getting a hotel somewhere, but I think I needed that because I was raised so rural.
Well, yeah, but also
cities seem scary and.
Yeah. But then also you get into, I mean, 20 grand is a lot of money until you start, you know, just spending $100-something a day just sleeping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For a couple hours. Better just stay at someone's house. Okay, go ahead.
And I did burn it quite fast when I first moved here and didn't work for like 6 months. But I needed that at the time because I had spent so many... This was another thing about that factory. Mandatory overtime. Like, I lost my whole 20s like working 6-7 days a week, 10 hours a day. Like, when I was kind of going through an old box a couple years ago when I was home, I was like looking at these pay stubs and it was like, man, 60 hours a week sometimes. I was working in the middle of summer, you know. I mean, the stability was okay, but the physical and mental drain of that was ridiculous. So
how long were you here before you made that EP, your first EP, the self-titled one?
Well, I when I first got to town, I played just under my last name.
Horniak.
And I called it Horniak because people remember it better that way.
Oh, that's good.
It's funner to say, you know.
Sure, sure.
And I did that for about a year and a half, and I started working with this drummer that was in a band called The Dealers, and you might remember these guys because from back in the Steamboat Black Cat days, there was a band called Lonely Child.
I can see that name in my head, but I don't know if I know anyone from that band.
When that band broke up, a couple of those guys formed this other band called The Dealers, and I started, they were doing an every Tuesday thing at Trophies.
Okay.
And I started sitting in with them, and then they were planning a trip to Wisconsin, which is kind of an old history with those guys. And basically they asked me to go along on that tour, and I did. And then I kind of joined up with that band, and I put out, we put out two CDs with that band. And then after 3 years in 2000...
Well, with the Dealers. So you became a member of the Dealers.
Right.
Okay.
And there were two. There was me and one other guy that was a songwriter. So it was basically like two singers in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 3 years is when I quit that and kind of went out on my own. And then I put that EP out in either 2008 or 9.
Yeah, kind of saying like, hey, this is me.
Yeah. I needed something that was
myself
and had my name on it. Yeah. Even though the Dealers albums were like my original songs, right. That it's like, you know, that logo and all that kind of stuff. And then I really got wrapped up in trying to make a living and wasn't really writing at all between that EP and then the last record I put out. And I just was playing lots of like paid gigs, like
sure.
Baby
Mexican
A's
restaurants.
And, yeah, places around town where I could get a guarantee.
What was the other one? There was one I did in 2004, basically like kept me alive. I was doing like three of them a week. What's the other one? El Arroyo. And there was one out on B Caves, and then there was one on that one on 6th Street, and then there was one way up on 183.
So you were doing like Circuit 2?
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday even. Yeah.
And that's what Baby A's was good for a while, was like the Barton Springs one did Sundays and Tuesdays, I think. And then
they're long gigs. They're
3 hours. Yeah.
Killers on your thing. No one's listening, and you're mm-hmm. just playing solo acoustic, and you're just barely cutting through. And
yeah.
But they build up those calluses.
Yeah, and they pay.
They pay you to live.
You know, I walked away from the part-time day job I had, so I was just really...
What were you doing there?
I worked at Texas French Bread up here on
Congress and Annie. How was that?
That was good. I mean, that's where I met my
TFB.
Wife. TFB. She calls me cute TFB boy.
That's where you met her?
Uh-huh.
And you were working behind the counter?
I did.
And you waited on her?
I invited her to a gig
show?
At Ego's. And
I had a girlfriend that I met like that. Yeah. I worked at Whole Foods behind the counter.
And I know this
for like 3 years.
I know this won't translate to the recording, but like she came to Ego's to see me play, and I totally thought she was out of my league. And when she was leaving, she was like, you know,
she was like waving like kind of like, stars in her eyes.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, she likes me, you know.
Yeah.
And
so how did you? What happened? Did you have to wait? Did you have a number? Wait, she left. And she waved with stars in her eyes.
Right.
And you've got nothing except hopefully she comes back to TFB.
Exactly.
Shit.
I think maybe I had given her a card. And at the time, she had just left a job and was sort of trying to do this freelance thing, helping musicians get like press kits together or this and that.
Jesus.
Yeah, didn't pay real well.
Well, that's always like when somebody has their shit together and like opens themselves up to musicians, it's all of a sudden you're like this, like, what do you call those? Like wet nurse or something. Like these dudes just all like, not to say anything gross about your wife, but they're all like, please help me, take care of me. I'm helpless. I don't know how to make a list.
And she had a lot of people stiffer on money and all that.
I'm sure. God, poor thing.
But she got together with me to kind of talk about that, which I think there was probably other motives involved, but she was like, well, you got everything together or whatever. And I was like,
wait,
love to take you out to dinner sometime.
Yes.
And that's how it...
So wait. So she came to Texas French Bread. She's like, man, you know, I do this thing. We could probably get together and have a meeting.
She emailed me because I gave her the card. Okay. And then we met up at, it was 503 Coffee at the time on Old Torf.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be like a general business meeting, but I think we ended up like talking for like 3 hours or something like that. And then at the end of it, it was like this kind of like, well, you've kind of got everything together that I'm helping people do. And
so then she was probably impressed too. She's like, okay, cool. I don't have to wet nurse this guy. So she's a music business person.
She's marketing and advertising industry, like ad industry history. And then about 3 years ago, I kind of convinced her to start freelancing again, doing what she does.
Hey, we need less security in our lives. Honey. Yeah. You should really
need more flexible income.
Flexible income.
And I want to be able to go on vacation. And it wasn't really that. I just, like when an ad agency loses a big client, they'll basically like clean house and they'll decide to just fire 10 or 12 people.
Sure.
And she's like,
I mean, I say that because I watch Mad Men. But
right.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. That's exactly what she does, is the Mad Men type of industry. And that's
cool.
Like, and her grandfather actually worked in it back in
on
those
Madison
days.
Avenue?
Whenever you actually drew the ads and all that.
Yeah.
her last gig she just did was with a company called DDB that is on Madison Avenue, like a big Mad Men type of agency that's been around for a while. But I got sidetracked. What were we talking about?
How you met her. You worked at TFB. Oh, that's how you're making ends meet.
Oh.
Working at TFB.
Yeah.
And that was your part-time job.
That was the part-time gig, like Monday through Thursday.
And then you went, you decided as well to take a little bit more flexible of an income and a little less security financially and go into just
music.
Straight up jamming.
And part of that was I really dug the whole, like I used to want to run the cash register because I liked talking to people and all that interaction. But if you've ever done like service industry work, like this 1% of people like ruin it for everybody. And after 2.5-3 years of doing that job, I started to become bitter.
Yeah.
Because of the occasional like rude customer or whatever. And everybody would always hide in the back anyway. And kind of nobody wanted to kind of deal with the public. But
yeah,
the kicker was that we had this cash register that was like a replacement one, like from Office Depot, and it got stuck on refund all the time. And like the tapes were always messed up. And supposedly like the boss lady said that some money came up missing, like $300 was short in the drawer one day, and her and the owner decided they were going to withhold our tips to pay the money back, which I don't even know if that's legal. But at the time it was like, man, my paycheck like barely pays my one bedroom apartment
shitty
rent.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you're
going
to keep the $15 a day that I use to go and buy a pack of cigarettes and get Vietnamese food after work or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think that was it. I did one of those, take this job and shove it, and walked out like in the middle of my shift kind of thing. But
that's good. Was there production involved? Did you yell or did you just go like, guys, this is, and you took off your apron and like threw it down like in a symbol of anger.
Right. Yeah, take these pickles.
Yeah. Yeah. They make good sandwiches, man.
They do. And I was a top sandwich maker for
really?
Sure. Yeah. Cause I'm all OCD in how I spread like the vegetables out and everything's got to be even. So you get a little something in each bite.
Yeah.
Yeah. I take pride in everything I do, you know, whether it's making a sandwich or.
Do you think that's a Pennsylvania trait?
I believe that is one of those trait? Like hardworking, like, you know, sort of things. And I see that same thing in my wife, which is why.
Where's she from?
She grew up in Albuquerque.
Okay.
And well, she was born in Oklahoma City, lived in Albuquerque. Her dad worked for the government.
Oh.
And then they moved to Kingwood, Houston when she was like 10 or 12 because the school systems were not
better.
So good in New Mexico, and
right.
her dad wanted them to have like a top notch education or whatever. So they moved to like a nice suburb or like the schools were
like a homemade town,
exactly
a handmade town.
All the houses look the same and all.
Somewhat, I lived in the Woodlands, which is which is the anti Kingwood,
right across 1960. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Okay, so how did you meet Rich Brotherton? Like, was that through playing? Like, what did you do through that time? You just wrote songs, you got your shit together, were you able to get more gigs?
So she took a job offer with another big ad agency out of Chicago, and we moved to San Antonio for about a year and a half because she was working there. Sometimes they'll hire you to be on site with the client who was USAA.
Yeah, just like Mad Men.
Right.
You go to Detroit to take care of the GM guys.
So you're there like all the time, like so there's a face. And so we moved to San Antonio and it was kind of like this like let's try something new and start over kind of thing. And
you could still maintain a music thing here.
I still had like my
away.
Regular gig
at
North by Northwest that I did and a couple other ones that I've since let go, but
what's North by Northwest?
It's a brewery up north of like 183 in Capital, Texas.
It's behind there where that movie theater is, kind of?
Yeah, like the Gateway Shopping Center is kind of in that. And that's kind of like my every other couple times a month gig that I do.
It's
that
good.
Kind of helps me pay the bills. And I usually do it as a duo, sometimes a trio. But I was isolated in San Antonio, you know, and didn't really have any distractions. And she was like flying to Calgary to do work all the time. And I had all this like time to just really focus on writing. So I wrote like this whole album's worth of songs. And then I contacted Jerry and Nancy Tubb, because that's where I've done mastering in the past.
Yeah.
And I just kind of said, like, who do you love getting mixes from? Like, who are some studios in town that you sort of recommend? And she gave me, like, Ron Flint's Jumping Dog and Congress House. I think I went to on my own.
I
listened to that podcast, too. That was great.
That's a great studio.
And that was kind of like on my short list too. I kind of like the next time around, I want to try.
I like Ron too. Ron's an interesting cat. Great musician too. So is Mark Coleman.
I heard that Ron does well with the producing thing too. Will help you sort of shape songs a little bit.
Oh yeah. So he should be able to. He's a pop guy.
So you asked me about Rich, and that was another name of people that I should check out. And I got a hold of him, and I went over, and he basically said, "Well, if I'm available, usually the other guys are too." And then like this light went off, and I was like, "So I can have all of Robert Earl Keen's band back me up and record on these tracks."
Oh, he plays with Robert Earl Keen?
Yeah, okay. That's his main gig. And then when they're not on the road, he runs that studio out of his house and whatever other pickup gigs he does. But so that was very appealing to be able to record with all Robert Earl Keen's guys. Mm-hmm. And that's why I did half the record with him, and then I did the other half in a studio up north called Figment Studio. And he had ties with like Dave Sanger and Dave Miller with Asleep at the Wheel, yep, and Cindy Cashdollar and Casper.
So you
and all
got all
those
guys. Those guys, mm-hmm, and you did some stuff. Dave Sanger played some drums.
Dave Sanger played drums on like half the record.
I like that guy a lot.
Yeah. Scott Matthews played drums on a couple tracks, that plays with the Derailers.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
shit, so that's like an all-star cast. I mean, were you in heaven? Were you like, this is why I got out of Clark's Mills,
Pennsylvania.
I did that without even looking at my notes. Nice. See that? I almost did. I felt the pull.
It's in there.
Clark's Mills, Pennsylvania. I wanted to go and make records with dudes from fucking Asleep at the Wheel, Robert Earl Keen's band, like,
yeah,
the guys.
And that was kind of how it happened. Was I had saved up money to record a record, and I kind of thought, well, like, you know, you kind of start putting the quotes together and how much people charge, and it really is pretty reasonable considering. I mean, if you recorded in New York or L.A., but I was like, well, I'll just do like two songs with this guy and see how they turn out. And I basically like brought those rough mixes home that night on two tracks. And I was just like, wow, you know, it's mind blowing to hear, especially when you're like demoing stuff.
It's really nice, too. It's got a very organic,
yeah,
sound, you know, and still,
oh, you listen to some of it?
Big, yeah.
Okay, great.
Think I just come in here and don't listen to anything? That's crazy.
I listened to some of your stuff before we came too. I saw your video with Suzanne Schaffel and some of the other people.
Oh, yeah.
And I am a fan of the podcast, which
I'm noticing that. That's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
It's weird when somebody actually says something to me about it. It happened to me the other night. So a couple of people were like, "Hey,
I'm like quoting you from
your
podcast."
Weird. Yeah. You know what's funny is I don't listen to it, so I don't. Sometimes I don't know what I said. And it's interesting because someone will say something, and I'll be like, that sounds like something I'd say, but I really said that?
They're
like,
well, yeah. You have so many of them going on, you probably don't have time to go back once you
No, sometimes I do. Like, I did listen to one I did with Billy Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I like him, and it, like, he just makes me laugh so much. I just like to go back and make sure I heard everything.
Steve Poltz mentioned him, too.
Yeah.
Right? He's records with him. See, that's a name,
yeah,
I'm not... I mean, I know the name,
yeah,
but...
Yeah, Billy's produced a couple of Steve Poltz records. He produced a Bob Schneider album. He produces Charlie Mars, another... have you heard him?
No.
It's like a pop country guy.
No,
anyway, so you made this record, Marigold. And when did you put it out? A couple years ago?
I think 2011 or 2012 was when it sort of like officially dropped. And then I learned some like hard lessons about pushing a record and how I was like late to the game with like hiring publicists. And I did do a radio campaign that went pretty well. Like it got some play pretty much everywhere but Texas, but which kind of surprised me because I had all these like Texas names in the bio, you know, but it was just like a lot of like public and college radio stations around the U.S. and got some play in Europe.
Where it's probably a little bit more to say, oh, I've got these guys, you know, real authentic Texas guys. But when you're from Texas, they might be, so what? We're here.
Yeah,
you know,
we've heard
them
a million times. Yeah. You know what's strange is, like, I'm not country enough. And not that I necessarily want to be, because I've never really considered that my genre. But I'm not country enough to play, like, a Texas country bar, per se, like Jenny's or whatever. But someone hears my music like up north and like, wow, this is so country, because they hear all that like steel guitar on there. And there's like a different perception of, it doesn't take much to be considered country, like north of the Mason-Dixon line or something. You know?
Where do you, I mean, obviously you seem like you don't have too much of an ear for new country music. But where do you stand with, like, the Luke Bryans and these kind of baseball?
I'm not sure who Luke Bryan is.
He's the guy that sings, That's My Kind of Night. He's got a lot of songs like that.
That sounded all right.
That's literally the worst description of a guy. He does this thing, man, where his records, to me, sound like a cross between a guy that listens to a whole lot of Jay-Z and also Def Leppard, Hysteria.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like that to me. Because, like, when the song starts, he goes, come on. Like, he does, like, that rap thing. And then
so it's like Americana, like, hip-hop kind of mix?
He's like at the gas station. Like when you go to the gas pump, there's like a picture of him. Like, hey, this guy. And his teeth are like so white. It's not, it's like weird.
I'm sure they're veneers.
They're almost blue or something. They don't look like real people's teeth.
Maybe they photoshopped his teeth in.
So Marigold, you can get this at your website. You can get it. And your website is rickhorniak.com. Horniak or Horniak?
Well, it's pronounced Horniak, but okay. I like to... Horniak. Tell people Horniak because then they seem to remember it because everyone has a sexual brain basically. So,
yeah,
you know,
I didn't make any dick jokes this whole show. So I'm actually...
Please do. I love to draw them on things whenever I
do. You?
Yeah. There's like a whiteboard or something.
I was once in the studio after the Meat Puppets and that Kurt Kirkwood. Man, there's a lot of blowjob pictures and the people that are giving the blowjobs are really not happy to be doing. Usually they're. It's really disturbing. So you're going to go out on tour and you're doing this thing like Wisconsin basically and the Midwest and all this stuff like from July 4th to July 27th. I mean, yeah,
I'll be gone for the month. And that's kind of an annual thing that I started doing.
Summer tour?
Yeah, I try to because I have that hub. And what I mean by hub is free place to stay in Wisconsin. So we'll do like a couple weeks worth of shows like around that general area and then I'll drive over to my hometown and kind of do and I've kind of like I've got those roots.
When you say we, you're going with the band? How do you do your shows mostly? I mean, because it's expensive to play with band.
It is people. And this is why we can get into this with the Steve Poltz thing too, but I sometimes take all local people, like where I have all three guys in the van, you know. I usually play as a four piece. I've done some tours as a three piece where I played lead guitar because of budget reasons.
How does that go? I mean, are you a guy? Can you jam?
I'm not.
Are you a Rich Brotherton?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
Wow, yeah, that's good. It's been sort of the soloing thing's kind of a new, and it was out of, I don't want to say desperation, but I did get tired of the ongoing negotiations sometimes with the wages, you know what I mean? Like,
it's just tough because the money's not there.
And it isn't, and I just don't...
And there's sometimes guys, and they're not any good at business, and you go like, hey, you want to do this thing? I've got this much. They're like, yeah. And then literally like the week before you're going, they're like, dude, like this is just not going to be enough.
I haven't had that happen yet, but that would be a never call you back type of situation.
Yeah, yeah, that's a deal breaker.
Or the guy that took 3 hours to put his drums in the van one time, that was another tour... Yeah, like at his storage unit, practice space or whatever, we're like standing in the sun for like 3 hours. Like, dude,
like
put your drums in the van. We had like a 20-hour drive ahead of us or whatever. And he just like, he had some mental issues that didn't really
show themselves until that day. You get these guys, you get in a van and then all of a sudden you're like, oh no, this guy is a freaker. Like a person that freaks out about stuff that you can't really do anything about.
Yeah, or had... I think he had like a bunch of acid and weed on him too that he insisted on bringing with him, and that made me real nervous having all that in the car. But I've toured with like Vinny, who you did a podcast with.
Oh yeah, and Brazone.
Yeah, he went with me one time. Danny G's went on a couple. You did a podcast with him. Yeah. So that's what when I see a name I recognize, that's when I listen or I've heard the name enough or curious.
Yeah.
Certainly the Steve Poltz was what Daniel Jones and I have had a lot of these like heart-to-heart talks about what it means to be a musician, and
Jones can have those conversations. He's a
deep,
good heart-to-hearter.
He's a deep guy.
He is. I love that guy.
Yeah, and so we bonded over this book that Stephen Pressfield wrote called The War of Art. Have you ever read that?
Yes, in fact, yeah, I have it.
So we were both kind of influenced by this idea that, like, you have to sit down and do your craft, like, every day. That's what that book just sort of, like, don't expect results. And that was, like, the thing that was, like, eye-opening for me. It was like, yeah, when you go with that, like, I don't care if I finish a song today or get anything new, but I just got to go punch the clock and put my time in as a songwriter. It's amazing how things start to happen when you make yourself do that.
Yeah, but you're right. You come up with better stuff. You're coming up with more stuff. Your muscle is ready at any time. And when someone says throw down for a good song, it's a higher chance of you being able to do it because you're in the zone.
Yeah. And I feel like they come to you anyway. Like, I think it talks about that in the book too, where you're basically just a vessel for it to happen.
Yeah.
So you have to be there and be open for it too.
And you gotta stop what you're doing and go do a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, you know what, man? I'm sorry. I would love to sit here, snort cocaine off of this dead hooker.
I would.
All
I would
night,
love it.
Bro, but I just had a song idea.
And it's called Snorting Coke Off of a Dead Hooker Blues.
I wish that was my life sometimes. Just so at least I'd have something interesting to talk about. So people can find out all these dates. You're going to be in Wisconsin. You're going to be going to Pennsylvania, traveling all around. And a couple of guys this time in the van. You go from here, you don't fly up there and then just make it a hub?
Well, I finally kind of established some local guys that work up my material ahead of time.
Oh, that's good.
So sometimes I fly up there and I just strictly work with them and they have all the gear and I just borrow guitars and amps and all that kind of stuff. This particular time, because I'm going to Wisconsin and haven't made that particular hub connection yet as far as like local musicians, I'm taking a drummer with me, Eric Reitman, and I'll pick up Matt Brooks on the way, who used to play guitar for Two Hoots and a Holler.
Oh, yeah.
So he's living in Iowa currently, and I'll pick him up, and we'll do the first week as a trio with him on bass, and I'll play lead guitar, and then basically I'll fly my lead guitar player in from Pennsylvania into Madison like halfway through that tour, and then he'll do the remainder of the tour with me. So it's always like a different...
That's cool, though. I mean, what you're doing is you're adapting, but you're not letting it stop you from getting out there and spreading the word and playing gigs.
And sometimes that's why I buy a bunch of new t-shirts, so I force myself to have to line up more tours, you know.
Did you get new t-shirts?
I did. I got a whole bunch. That's why I brought it up. I was like,
Did you bring me one?
No. Do you want one? I'll get you one. I'll mail one to you.
Okay. I'll give you my address.
Cool.
Unless I just figure it out in your mind what my address is.
1500
East. Nope.
You can edit that out, right?
Yeah. It's bad now that we have this thing, like the walking trail. I'm always scared someone's going to assassinate me.
No. Do you have that many enemies?
No.
I got a few.
No.
I have one that I'm afraid is going to assassinate me.
Really?
Someday, an ex-friend, yeah.
Is this something you're going to call me about and ask me to edit out of the podcast tomorrow?
No, actually, because I've just cut all ties with him, and that's the best way to do it. So, but
I always wonder if my enemies, not my enemies, but people that don't like me, listen to this show just to find out what's going on. Or just to be like, did you hear him? Now he's so stupid. He went to Houston and played with Skyrocket again.
I think that most of the time enemies are people that are filled with envy.
Yeah.
And that's what motivates.
Envy-me's.
Yeah.
Envy-me's.
And I try to remember the same thing when people say things that can be, like, my best friend David and I, we don't ever say anything like derogatory towards each other, but I've just noticed sometimes in working relationships and all that, it's like, it's kind of a slam, but if you call them out on it, you'd be like, hey, I'm just kidding around, you know? But I think a lot of times those kind of things are based in envy too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, me too. So, where's your wife right now?
Working.
Okay.
Flexible income.
Flexible income.
Mm-hmm. Someone's got to pay the bills around the house.
And do you have any animals?
Yes, I have one little dog now and a fish aquarium, which was kind of a bad idea as far as the touring thing goes, but...
What kind of dog?
What's it's a name? Shih Tzu.
Okay.
Gizmo, like the little Mogwai. Yep. Now, I did have a dog, I don't know if you read in my other bio, named Buddy.
Yeah.
It's like... He was a Great Dane boxer mix that I brought here with me, and he passed away. And I actually took him home because I had this roommate at the time that kept leaving the door open, and I think he was getting to that kind of older, senile dog.
Yeah, just kind of.
And he got lost twice. And the first time, a customer, again, with Texas French Bread, I met so many people through working that job, she like saw a flyer somewhere that someone had found this dog, and ended up being a girl that was a waitress at the Continental Club. Alicia had him the first time, and then the second time I was going to like town like animal shelter every day, and I found him, and someone had basically like tried to keep him and like got him shots and everything. I had to show the people like the flyer, like, no, this is my dog, I'm looking for him or whatever. And
I was just there a couple days ago
at Town Lake.
I did a photo shoot with Austin Pets Alive, and then I took a tour of the thing.
You kind of want to take them all home, right?
Yeah, that's why I have all that literature there.
Yeah, we want to get Gizmo a little buddy, but we just haven't got around to it.
I understand. It's hard when you're a traveling person and also your wife travels.
Mm-hmm.
What's her name?
Amanda.
Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
Is she a fan?
She is.
She likes Marigold, the album?
She says it's beautiful.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do now? What's your next album?
Well, I've been joking around at my gigs when I play a couple of the new tracks that the new album's called Procrastination, because, you know, a couple of years has gone by now that since I put that last record out, and I just can't believe sometimes that, I don't know, I just really have a hard time with focusing and doing the press field thing. Like, I know what I need to do, but yet I'll find other things that distract me.
Right. And it's tough because now if people aren't just like songwriters or making an album. Like, you're a little business, man. You got to make sure your shirts are ready for your tour. You got to spend an amount of time on social media.
Yeah.
Expressing to the world that you're doing something, which is totally weird. But you got to do it. It's all part of the game.
That's one of those things that's actually on the list, is making the Facebook events for the tour. And then you have to sit there and like click all 1,000 of your friends. Why do they not have a select all?
I don't know.
Because they don't care.
They don't care. Is there anything that I'm missing? Oh, you're going out. Okay, so basically from July 4th to July 27th, you will be out on tour. People can go to rickhorniak.com and see where you're going to be on the tour dates. And you're doing July 4th in Wisconsin, Rapids, Wisconsin, along with July 5th.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
In the Rapids?
The shows. Like, you're playing the same town 2 days in a row. Only one day is July 4th.
Yeah, they have, their annual...
Saturday, though.
Yeah,
Friday's... good night.
Friday's the 4th of July, and they have what they call the Bermuda Triangle, which is where all the bars are on this little... And they have, their downtown fireworks celebration on Friday night. And then the Saturday gig's just another kind of place that we got our foot in the door. We'll just play. It's like an earlier show.
Great.
And you asked me about Marigold as well, as far as they can get it on website, CD Baby, Waterloo Records has physical copies of it.
Good. Did you bring me a physical copy?
That will be in that package that I sent. See, I didn't know if you wanted this.
Yeah, I want all stuff.
Okay. Because some people, they're like, you're like, here, I brought you a CD, and they're like, oh, thanks, and they don't really want it, you know, so.
Yeah,
but if you really want it,
I do.
I'll send you that and a t-shirt.
Yeah, I wear a small.
Okay.
I don't know how much longer I'll be wearing a small. I ate a lot of ice cream last night. I did.
I also heard your podcast about when you talked about how you gained all this weight while you're married.
Yeah, not married. I was in a relationship with somebody that
cooked all the time.
Pastry chef.
Okay.
Yeah.
It happens because I'm growing out of my normal size clothes, and I sort of refuse to go anywhere past this, you know.
Do that, and I'm going to do the same. Let's make a pact. Two dudes
losing weight, counting calories.
Okay,
the
on that
skinny
note,
tour.
Is there anything I'm missing? Or we're good? We did.
I don't think so. Unless there's something else you wanted to talk about.
No, I think that we do.
You have enough?
I think so. I think this is a whole show.
Okay.
Thanks, Rick. People, get out there, check him out, go see him on tour if you're out in the Midwest or in Pennsylvania somewhere. Hey, and if you're Amish or a Quaker, write me on Twitter. I'd like to meet you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me. Today. No one's gonna stop
us. Cause what do we have to lose? Rick Horniak. Great guy, man. Really nice guy. You know, songwriter. He's out there doing it, making stuff happen. Go check him out while he's on tour. If you're out there in the Wisconsin or in the Pennsylvania area, get into Rick Horniak and find out more about him, okay? And while you're out there on the internet finding out more about things, you can go to the iTunes and subscribe to this podcast. And if you leave a rating and a comment, it leaves us with a better overall rating so that we can secure advertising. Keep this show free for you, the listener. And while you're out there on the internet, you can also like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? That's what it's called. You can just go there, like it, find pictures. Actual whole video of a live podcast we did at Strange Brew. It's actually very funny. I don't know if you're into watching what it is that we do, but we did a live video of a live show. So there you go. And also, you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. I am at Johnny Gowdy, okay? Let's listen to some more Rick Horniak, his song Cigarettes. Let's get down.
I won't take you to Cincinnati. Won't take you down to Omaha. I'm tired of you being right here with me. I never said that you could come along. I won't take you down to Tallahassee. Won't take you to Nashville, Tennessee. I'm tired of you being right here with me. I never said that you could ride for free. I'm a man on a mountainside, holding on for dear life. I wish someone would come along and just save me. I know I have to do it on my own. I can't take you out to California. Can't take you to Oregon. I'm tired of you being right here by my side. Come along. I'm a man on a mountainside, holding on for dear life. I wish someone would come along and just save me. I know I have to do it on my own. Come along and just save me.